is Tom Bias. I'm CEO of Growth Energy, and we very much appreciate everyone hopping on the call today. With me today will be Jeff Cooper, who's the Senior Vice President at RFA, Bob Dineen, who's President and CEO of RFA, and Jim Miller, who's Vice President and Chief Economist for Growth Energy. We wanted to discuss the memo that came out in the rule package that was made public in the docket by EPA, confirming yet again something that we had all confirmed before, that RIN prices didn't and don't have an impact on retail gas prices. And today we're going to take the opportunity to highlight that fact, and that renewable fuel is good for consumers, the American economy, and again call on EPA to go back to the drawing board and change this proposed rule, which we feel is misguided. I think there are going to be 4 points that we're going to make. Again, the RIN prices had no impact on retail gas prices in 2013 when they reached their highest point. Point number two, it helps the American consumer and the economy, providing a less expensive fuel and a cleaner fuel. Three, the fact that the RFS helps consumers at the pump, holding down fuel prices. And fourth, how the RFS has strengthened America's national security, energy security, jobs that can't be outsourced, reduce pollution, and save consumers at the pump. And the evidence is pretty clear. The proposal by EPA certainly does not go forward as called for in the RFS. And a lot of the hullabaloo that we've heard out here over the last few years is, oh my gosh, it'll drive up RIN prices through the roof, raise consumers' price. But it was just rhetoric by those obligated parties who don't want to live up to their obligation in the renewable fuel standard. At this time, to talk a little more in detail about it, I'll turn it over to Jeff Cooper, who's the Senior Vice President at RFA and economist. Jeff?
Well, thanks very much, Tom, and thanks to everybody for joining the call this afternoon. I mean, we typically wouldn't organize a press call like this to talk about a detailed technical memo that's buried deep in the docket for the RFS rulemaking, but we thought this memo is significant enough that it was worth calling to your attention, and we think this memo is significant in that you now have both EPA and former White House officials on record. Prices have no impact on retail prices for E10 gasoline, and both are now also on record as stating that RIN prices could actually lead to lower retail prices for fuel blends that have higher ethanol content, blends like E85 and E15, for instance. So it struck us as noteworthy that in this memo and really in the proposal itself, EPA is finally openly acknowledging a few things that we think are very important. And I wanted to highlight just a few of those key findings and conclusions from the EPA memo in case you haven't had a chance to digest all 31 pages yet. But I think most importantly and most striking is the conclusion right up front that EPA did not see and doesn't expect to see any changes in retail prices for transportation fuels across the entire fuel pool as a result of any fluctuations in RIN prices. And as Tom mentioned, that's something we've been arguing really for the better part of 2.5-3 years now. EPA also says that, the reason there's no impact is because the RIN price is not an additional cost to the consumer. It's really just a transfer payment between parties that are blending renewable fuels and obligated parties who are producing petroleum-based fuels. And obviously, those obligated parties are required to obtain RINs and demonstrate compliance with the RFS. And in many cases, those obligated parties, those oil companies, are both producers or importers of gasoline and blenders of renewable fuels. And so you effectively have those folks acquiring all the RINs they need internally through their own vertically integrated operations. Another key finding that we found in the memo is that, you know, when a detached RIN is transacted, it generates revenue for the RIN seller and may be booked as a cost for the RIN buyer, but there's no impact for the buyer of the finished fuel at the pump, the consumer buying the E10 or whatever whatever fuel they're purchasing at the pump. But beyond that, and really this is the first time we've kind of seen EPA go this far, is they spent a lot of time in this memo talking about how RIN prices can really transform the gasoline marketplace. And they talk about how a higher RIN price is actually expected to result in a significant decrease in the price for E85. And clearly we've seen real-world evidence of this happening in places like Minnesota and Iowa, but also even in places like Florida and Texas. And the memo from EPA really discusses some of those real-world observations and explains this behavior. And essentially what you have happening is, you know, when a marketer or blender buys ethanol with the RIN attached and they blend it with a little bit of hydrocarbon to make E85, they separate and sell that RIN. The program was designed to work. We have evidence that it was working that way. But I guess the other important takeaway from the memo is that EPA believes merchant refiners who largely purchase separated RINs to meet their RFS obligations are not disadvantaged competitively by higher RIN prices, and there are a number of ways that those merchant refiners who may not have blending assets can comply with the regulation without having these kinds of disastrous economic impacts that they've claimed. So I guess, you know, overall, these are not new ideas, and certainly economists at Iowa State and University of Illinois have been saying, you know, these things for 2 years now. Informa Economics is a private firm that's conducted two statistical studies for RFA, and they found no evidence whatsoever of a causal relationship between RINs and gas prices. And some of that informal work is actually referenced in the EPA memo. So these are, you know, these are not new ideas, but I think this is a case where the messenger is as important as the message. It isn't what's being said in the EPA memo that's so significant here. It's who is saying it. You know, because again, you go back to 2013, and everything we were hearing was that the administration was terrified of the potential impact of higher RIN prices on consumer fuel prices. And the oil industry really played to those fears, and the result was a proposal for the 2014 RVOs that embraced the blend wall and really disemboweled the RIN market mechanism and really touched off the melee that we still find ourselves in today. So I guess just to finish up, I think it's great to see that EPA is finally openly recognizing how the RIN market can work to transform the marketplace and recognizing that consumers are insulated from any impact of RIN trading amongst obligated parties. But unfortunately, you know, the agency seems to have a bad case of schizophrenia. You know, on one hand, they're publishing this memo and this detailed analysis that shows they fully understand how this RIN program can work. But then on the other hand, they publish a proposal that completely cuts the RIN mechanism off at the knees and really maintains the status quo and keeps things below the blend wall. And, you know, we've seen the response to that. Ethanol RIN prices have crashed by half since mid-May, and it's broadly understood that those lower RIN prices mean there's going to be less of a market push to break through that so-called blend wall. So I guess just in closing, we're having a really hard time kind of reconciling the fact that both EPA and the White House now seem to understand that RINs don't impact retail gasoline prices and actually serve to reduce prices for E15 and E85, but then they put out a proposal that really shoots the RIN mechanism in the foot. So I guess with that, I would now turn it over to Jim Miller.
Thanks, Jeff. And let me just make a couple of quick comments. Big Oil has been trying to make the case really since 2013 that rising RIN prices were going to directly be passed on to the consumer in the form of higher gas prices. This EPA memo, along with other work that that Growth Energy have done on this issue, I think clearly shoots down just another element of big oil scare campaign in their effort to destroy the renewable fuel standard. Unfortunately, there have been some advisors in the administration that seem to have bought into the oil industry's arguments concerning RINs. And again, this memo, I think, does help in setting the record straight on the fact that RINs do not increase gasoline prices to the consumer, period. I think that is the issue. I think the other main point that Jeff alluded to that is really critical as we look forward in terms of what we can do in the renewable fuels industry is the incentive that RINs can create within the market for motor fuel to encourage both refiners, blenders, and retailers to expand the use of higher blends, both E85 and certainly now E15. Just a week ago, I was in Minneapolis, had an opportunity to visit a couple of retail service stations in that city who are selling E15. The price of E15 in Minneapolis was 10 cents a gallon less than the price of E10, and the consumer was getting an additional point of octane, which is helping his engine performance. Clearly, the reason that those retailers are able to offer that is blending the fuel, and they're actually increasing their margin with a portion of the value of the RIN, as well as being able to discount the price to the consumer because of that RIN value. So now we're in the rulemaking process, and EPA has issued a proposed rule that doesn't even begin to reflect the fact that RINs don't impact consumer prices and can incentivize the market. So we believe they still have an opportunity to modify this proposal, to recognize that the market for RINs really can serve as the incentive to meet the RFS volumes, and that an adequate supply of RINs certainly exists to continue to provide the obligated parties the flexibility that they claimed they needed when the RFS was first enacted in order to comply with the law. So we hope EPA will consider the memo that they drafted, that they included in the docket, and revise their proposed rule to reflect the positive elements that the RFS provides everyone in America. With that, let me turn it over to Bob Dineen to kind of conclude our comments, and then we'll look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Jim, and thank all of you for participating, and I will indeed be uncharacteristically brief because I really just have one final wrap-up comment to make. Why is this important? Well, it's important because by failing to implement the statute, which requires 15 million gallons of corn-derived ethanol in 2016, EPA is systematically destructing the RIN credit market and discouraging investment in new technology and infrastructure that would break the blend wall. And this, despite their own analysis showing that higher RIN prices don't hurt consumers. So why are they doing it? It makes no sense. They're only helping the oil companies by doing this. Their own analysis and their own proposed rulemaking says that by increasing the potential profitability of blending renewable fuels, higher RIN prices can incentivize the build-out of the infrastructure necessary to blend and distribute renewable fuel blends. But what they're doing is manipulating the RIN market, artificially creating a surplus of RINs in the marketplace, devaluing that market, and ripping the guts out of the program by removing any incentive to invest in infrastructure or new technologies. More than that, they are ignoring all those surplus RINs as they evaluate the supply of renewable fuels for this program. And that is inconsistent with what they have done prior to the 2014 RVO and is inconsistent with the statute. We strongly believe that EPA needs to scrap this proposal and get the RFS back on track, which means with a RIN program that will drive the investments that Congress designed this program to do. And with that, I will turn it back over to Aaron for questions that any of you might have.
All right. Thanks, Bob, Jim, Jeff, and Tom. And, yeah, we will do a few minutes of questions now. If you do have a question, please dial *3. And we are going to turn first to Rachel Gantz with Opus.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much for taking my call and holding this call as well. Sorry, taking my questions. Can first each group provide a preview for what your groups plan to say during the RFS public hearing later this month? And second, there's an RFS hearing in the Senate scheduled for next week. Does anyone expect more RFS hearings in the future? And do you expect RFS reform efforts to heat up this year?
Rachel, this is Tom. For the hearing next week, we only get 3 minutes, so we may not even get our throats cleared. You know, it's unfortunate that they're making these comments so short, because the purpose of the public hearing is to really gather the input. And I understand they're busy, but they need to take the time to hear from people how this is going to impact their livelihoods, our national security, our energy security. And so we will certainly let you know how we speed read through all these issues in 3 minutes' time when we get closer to it.
And Rachel, I would just add that we probably just did give you a little bit of a preview of some of the subjects we'll be talking about, but you could also read our comments from the 2014 proposed RVO rulemaking, because EPA is, quite frankly, charting out much of the same analysis. And it's unfortunate that after 330,000 comments and the agency determining that it was going to pull that rule, they then went ahead and promulgated again much the same rule. So many of the arguments will be familiar. As Tom says, it would be nice if there was perhaps a little bit more time so that the agency could hear from folks in rural America that are truly going to be impacted by this and maybe learn a little bit of something when they're outside the beltway. I hope that they've got an open mind. I hope that they hear the very real concerns of consumers and farmers across the country that are really quite frustrated by EPA's unnecessary rollback of this program. With respect to other hearings that might be happening on Capitol Hill, I haven't heard of any besides the one that have already been noticed, but, you know, we'd love the opportunity to explain this program to folks that don't understand the benefits of the RFS, how it's revitalizing rural America, how it is saving consumers money, how it is driving investments in new technologies. This program has been an unmitigated success, and any effort to look at it ought to include a fair hearing of its benefits as well.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Rachel. And next up, we have Mario Parker with Bloomberg.
Yes, gentlemen. Thanks for holding this call. You may have answered this, Bob or Tom, but just wanted to really get the main takeaway here with this memo. How do you plan to use it in this current fight that you all have to get the proposal, I guess, adjusted here?
Well, I think what we're doing, Mario, and Bob said it, and Jeff and Jim, and I think all of us, is, you know, it's really bewildering that here the administration is saying there's no impact, yet they're fundamentally changing the goals of the RFS. And it's not based on whether or not we can produce enough biofuels for higher blend. It's not based on, obviously, and EPA agrees with this, that it's going to cost consumers. In fact, we argue it saves consumers. So what's the point with going with a proposed rule that is flawed yet again? marginally better than the last one, but still misses the mark.
Is it even considered a victory? That, I mean, next year it looks like there are going to be some cracks in the blend wall, though.
Now, Mario, here's the point. I mean, EPA likes to say that they're cracking the blend wall in 2016, but it's really barely a scratch because, again, they are ignoring the tsunami of RINs that they are creating, of credits that they are creating by being so timid in the volume requirements. And so you won't actually break the blend wall in 2016 when you're going to have, by EPA's own accounting, more than 1.8 billion RINs to account for whatever small crack in the blend wall they're trying to create. It will not drive new gallons into the marketplace. It will not drive the investment in infrastructure necessary to truly break the blend wall, and that's the problem. They're manipulating the credit market by artificially creating a surplus of RINs when the statute doesn't allow it.
And Mario, this is Jeff. I would just add a kind of to put a finer point on that, numerical example. I mean, the 2015 proposed RVO is 13.4 billion gallons. Well, we're on pace to generate 14.5 to 15 billion D6 RINs. And granted, some of those will be retired for exports of denatured ethanol and other purposes. But, I think any reasonable assessment of 2015 would lead you to the conclusion that we're going to generate a billion excess RINs or more above what is required under this proposed RVO for 2015, and those will carry into 2016 and depress RIN prices and kind of stifle that investment and keep the mechanism from operating as it should.
And that's a billion more than the 1.8 billion that EPA already says recognizes are out there. So you're careening towards 3 billion RINs. Take a while to burn through those when EPA is just sort of clawing at the blend wall.
Great, and thank you, Mario. Next we have Elliot with Argus Media.
Good afternoon. I was just curious, you guys have obviously been working a lot with your groups have been working on getting retailers and having some success in getting retailers to use higher ethanol blends. I'm just curious, given the proposal being out and the drop in D6 prices that we've seen, if you've had any of the folks that might have been considering it but hadn't quite, pulled the trigger on it yet, if you've heard any reticence or anybody changing their mind, just kind of like what consequences maybe this has already had on your efforts to win over retail chains and offering higher ethanol blends.
Elliot, this is Tom. We certainly have had a lot of interest with retailers over the last several months wanting to move to higher blends. I think everybody's probably taken a wait-and-see attitude to looking at what comes out in the final analysis. So it may be a little premature. We haven't had anyone back away because most retailers understand that how this process works, and they want to offer a lower price, as Jim just mentioned, 10 cents a gallon less for E15, and you've got 90% of all the cars in America that can run E15. It's a low-hanging fruit. There's not a big infrastructure change for most retail outlets. It can happen overnight. And by the same token, EPA has to be really careful. If they say they're for higher blends in the marketplace, their actions have consequences, and we'll just have to monitor it and take a look at it.
All right, and we have time for one more question, so we'll turn to Jackie with Farm Futures.
Good afternoon. I was just wondering, you guys talked a little bit about the RIN that have been developed each year. Can you kind of go through the numbers again on how many can be forward, you know, pushed forward to the next year, and what we saw in 2014, 2015, and 2000, you know, what we project in 2015. Just kind of walk me through some of those numbers on the RINs and how they can be rolled forward, and what we saw in 2014 that were rolled forward for 2015.
The numbers guy on that is Jeff. Why don't you walk through some of that?
Well, yeah, the problem here, Jackie, is that the 2013 compliance year hasn't yet been closed out even. So, I mean, obligated parties haven't even yet demonstrated compliance for 2013. And so it's a little tricky, a little difficult to know exactly how many RINs are floating around out there. I mean, you can certainly get some hints and imply some things from EPA's EMTS data. But until 2013 is put to bed, and then 2014, it's tough to know, you know, precisely how many RINs are going to carry into 2015, let alone, you know, 2016. But I guess just, you know, kind of our estimates, you know, coming into the 2014 compliance year, there were certainly more than a billion D6 ethanol RINs, and as Bob mentioned, EPA is estimating there were close to 2 billion RINs of all D-codes coming into 2014. We generated 14.35 billion ethanol RINs in 2014. About 500 million of those were retired for exports of denatured ethanol. So, when you include the carry-in to what was net available, you have probably 14.8 billion net RINs available to comply with a with a proposed RVO in 2014 of 13.25. So the delta there is 1.6 billion RINs or thereabouts. That's what would carry into 2015 just for ethanol. Now that's not including the biodiesel RINs or any excess renewable diesel RINs. You know, like Bob said, when you start adding those all together, the RIN stocks could very quickly swell to 2.5 to 3 billion RINs.
All right. Thank you, Jackie, for the question. And that is all the time we have today, folks. So thanks so much to the speakers and the participants on today's call.